Hello and welcome to the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the next hour. A big thanks to Sinead for keeping us company this afternoon. I have got loads coming up for you on the show, including LGFA action, rugby, Formula One, and loads more. So let's get into it. Starting with Gaelic Games, where Imokilly meet Muskerry today in the final of the Co-op Superstores Cork Division and College's Premier Senior Hurling Championship. That game gets underway from 7pm in Porky Ring. To the Premier League now, where there are three games down for decision today. Chelsea and Crystal Palace couldn't be separated in their fixture, which finished 1-1. Here's the full-time report.
It finished Chelsea 1, Crystal Palace 1 here at Stamford Bridge. The hosts will feel like they've lost 2 points rather than picking up one after a relentless first 45 minutes of the match. They opened the scoring with a classy tap-in from Jackson, set up by last weekend's wonder duo Madueke and Palmer. At the start of the second half and against the run of play, Eberé Eze curled the ball into the top right corner of the back of the net. There's not been a draw in their last 26 Premier League meetings. That's since 1990. It came to an end today. It finished Chelsea 1, Crystal Palace 1.
Meanwhile, Newcastle were 2-1 winners over Tottenham. Graham Courtney has the full-time report.
Newcastle 2, Spurs 1. What an entertaining game. Newcastle took the lead after 37 minutes. Lloyd Kelly finding Harvey Barnes in the Spurs area. He slid home on what was his return to the Newcastle starting lineup. Christian Romero had an 18th minute goal ruled out for offside. Second half, well, it was great to watch. Both sides going for it. Brennan Johnson had a 56 minute shot for Spurs. That was turned into his own net by the Newcastle centre-half Dan Byrne. And then 78 on the clock, Alexander Isak did the Spurs defence for pace to seal the 3 points. Finished at St James's, Newcastle 2, Spurs 1.
Elsewhere, Liverpool have continued their winning start to the new Premier League season with a dominant 3-0 win against Manchester United at Old Trafford. Here at home, there's a two-game card in the SSE Electricity League of Ireland Men's Premier Division. Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers met in the day's early game, with the final score being 2-1 in favour of Bohemians. The second game between St Patrick's Athletic and Drogheda United has just kicked off at 6pm. It is day 4 of the Paralympic Games in Paris, and Team Ireland have won their second medal. Katie George Dunleavy and her pilot Evie McChrystal have secured themselves the silver in the B3000 individual pursuit, earning Dunleavy her 6th Paralympic medal in total. Elsewhere in the velodrome, it wasn't to be for Martin Gordon and his pilot Owen Mullen after they finished 5th in the final of the B1000 metre time trial. On the water, Katie O'Brien and Tiernan O'Donnell finished 2nd in their B final of the PR2 mixed double sculls this morning. Finally, in Formula 1, Ferrari's Charles Leclerc picked up a home win for his team in the Italian Grand Prix at Monza this afternoon. He made the most of a one-stop strategy to finish ahead of McLaren pair Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris. Okay, we are going to start off this evening's show with some Cork LGFA action. Ger McCarthy was pitch side for today's Intermediate County Championship match between Ross Carberry and Inch Rovers. The final score was Ross Carberry 8 points to Inch Rovers 6 points. And here's Ger with the full-time report from that game.
Ross Carberry not 8, Inch Rovers not 6. The final score from today's Cork LGFA Intermediate County Championship game played in Ross Carberry. A third consecutive IFC win for the West Cork club puts them in pole position to reach the top 4 of this year's Round Robin series and a possible Intermediate County semi-final place. Kellyanne French top scored for the winners with 5 points, with Etienne Hayes 0-2 and Gráinne O'Brien also contributing. For Inch Rovers, Angela Walsh scored 0-3, Noel O'Donovan 0-2 and Sarah Harrington 0-1, but it wasn't to be for an Inch Rovers side that hit the crossbar and post on 3 different occasions throughout a free-flowing game. But at the final whistle, it was the West Cork club standing tall, Ross Carberry registering their third consecutive Intermediate Football Championship victory on a scoreline of 0-8 to 0-6. For the Big Red Bench in Ross Carberry, I'm Ger McCarthy.
Let's get some post-match reaction from the teams now. First up, we've got Ross Carberry manager Sean O'Neill and player Cliona Maguire, and then you'll hear from Introvers manager Shane Harrington.
Okay, Sean, congratulations. That's a third consecutive intermediate county championship victory for this Ross Carberry team, developing with each passing game. But you must be really pleased with the way your team performed and won today.
No, like, all right, we said at the start there for the game that like, if you get the performance, the result, you look after yourself, and like, I can't ask for any more for the girls, you know, or from our backs out, like, they were absolutely outstanding, you know. We've things to work on the forwards, we understand that, but you couldn't ask for the effort, the work rate was unbelievable, and like, you can't ask for any more.
That's an experienced team and a forward line that you were up against today, but from such a young panel that you have, the performance and holding them to 6 points, you must be especially delighted with that.
Oh, outstanding. Like, we conceded no goal in three games though, which is a great record to have, you know. No, like, our backs have been outstanding. We just can't believe, really, that they're playing so well.
Cliona, now you're one of those backs who had a fantastic game today. What is it about this team, the togetherness? I mean, you're up against a really, really tough opponent today, but you stood up to them.
Yeah, we were up against a tough side and maybe a more experienced side. We've lost to a lot of our older, more experienced players in the last couple of years, but we've asked the younger girls under 16s to really put it up to us, and they're putting us older players under pressure and taking place on the team. But I think we're really buying into what Sean and Noel and Michael Paul and Rena have asked us to, and that seems to be paying off.
Yeah, winning is a good habit to get into, and it's a very, very difficult championship, as you well know, but three wins on the bounce, I mean, that's a sign of improvement. We're not making any predictions here, but it's a real sign of improvement if you can do that in the intermediate grade.
Yeah, we were only saying, I don't think, at the start of the year, we'd have believed it if we said we'd 3 out of 3 at the very start of the championship, so we couldn't ask to be in a better position. We know we've excellent teams coming up against us, so it's just to drive it on and keep numbers coming to training and keep it going.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, because every team is in the same position. There's lots of things happening this time of the year, but the performance today from start to finish, you were up against the likes of Angela Walsh there, Noella Donovan, experienced campaigners, and he held them he clipped the bar a couple of times but no goals for the third consecutive game. As a defender, you and your defence must be really pleased with that.
We're thrilled, and like, that's been our goal all along, is to keep it a clean sheet in terms of goals. We couldn't ask the girls, we couldn't ask any more of them, but I think we're lucky. We've lost a lot of starters due to injuries, like other teams as well, but we've a very balanced team all around, so we're not relying on one or two players, which definitely makes a difference. We kind of trust everyone, so it's massive for us.
Indeed it is. And just finally, Sean, that's the key here. There's no one outstanding player that you're constantly relying on. This is a real team effort, and a lot of young players in that forward line, likes of Fatane, likes of Kellyanne French, really stood up as well today. That this bodes well. Whatever happens this year, it's the future for us Carberry ladies. It's looking really good now.
Yeah, 100%. Like the younger girls there, another one there, Katie Murphy, has been outstanding as well. Like, she didn't even start the first game, you know. And as Cliona said, we've had a few injuries, so like, they've had to come in a bit earlier than we thought they would. But like, they've improved, and they're still improving. And they took some hard hits out there today, and like, and they get up again straight away and drive on with it, and it's great to see. And we've a couple more on the bench that haven't even played yet, but they're ready to go if we need them.
Excellent stuff. All the best for the remainder of the county championship.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ger.
Shane, obviously disappointment for Introvers today, losing out to Ross Carberry in the intermediate championship, but you created enough goal chances on another day, you could have won. Is that any solace to you at this stage?
Sure, not really, Ger, but look, we did create a lot of chances. I'd say we hit the crossbar 3 times throughout the match, but look, if you don't take your chances at this level, it'll come back to bite you. But look, listen, we did create the chances, but you still need to finish them.
Considering you're under strength, look, and you know this championship better than anyone, it's so tight. Like, days like today, when things don't go your way, you can end up losing out, but you're not out of it by any means at all, and there's still games to come.
No, look, we've 2 games now at home in Killa to come over the next, we're out next Sunday, and then we've a break, and then we're out the following Sunday. But look, we're under pressure now. We've only 1 win from 4, so look, even if we do win our next 2 games, we're probably still relying on a couple of results to go our way. I'd say between, there's probably 4th spot is probably there between 3 teams as far as I can gather. So look,
and is that a fair reflection of where you are though, considering like, there's a lot of young players in this panel now as well that are just coming into it and getting used to the intermediate grade?
Yeah, look, I suppose Inch as a club are probably going through a bit of a transition. We're down from senior last year. We've a lot of kind of more experienced players: Angela Welch, Aoife Welch, Sarah Harrington, Ola Donovan, Lydia Williams. They're all in their 30s. we've a couple of girls in their 20s and we probably had four or five minors playing today. So like that's for any adult team, that's kind of a difficult gap to bridge. But look, we're doing our best with kind of what we have. There's, and I think the one thing that probably needs to be emphasised with clubs, especially in East Cork, is there was girls there playing Camogie with Killa and with Father O'Neill's three nights ago, and like that is hard in on the body to be playing three championship matches a week, which is what they're doing all the time. So that's difficult, you know.
And just finally, as we said, like the intermediate grade, it's new to a lot of players, but having come down from senior, like consolidating, finding your feet and going again, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, look, to be honest with you, we kind of knew ourselves where we'd be at a little bit this year coming down, but still we would have the quality to be able to compete at this level. Like look, we played Neighbourbawn a couple of weeks ago, a fine team. I don't know, Ross were a fine team, Ross Carberry another fine team, but like I'd say there's not much between a lot of the teams at this level, and even between some of the, I suppose, the lower level teams, the senior level, there's not a whole pile of difference as far as I can tell. Like, so look, we're kind of in a rebuilding job, but we still do have the quality to be progressing, hopefully.
Excellent stuff, thank you very much.
Not our job.
Let's chat Formula One now, because today saw an eventful Italian Grand Prix at Monza, aka the Temple of Speed. And if you didn't know anything about today's race and you saw that McLaren had landed second and third on the podium with zero context, you might assume that they'd be fairly happy with that result. But I think overall they'll be actually fairly disappointed with the fact that they didn't convert their qualifying 1-2 into a 1-2 on the podium, because they were certainly the fastest cars out on the grid and a win was there for the taking. And indeed, Oscar Piastri pulled out a lovely first lap pass on his teammate, who had a lot to contend with trying to hang on to his position as leader. But as the race developed, it emerged that a one stop was the fastest route to the finish line. And that just wasn't the McLaren strategy that they had opted for, which is also understanding because how hot the temperatures were this weekend in Monza. The tyres were being absolutely wrecked, and it just so happened that some teams were able to pull it off, but that wasn't the plan for McLaren. Piastri said after the race that he was very, very happy with his pace, but that it hurt to finish second. And Lando Norris was fairly magnanimous after the race. He said ultimately Ferrari drove a better race, particularly Charles, but that he didn't personally feel that the graining of his tyres would actually have allowed him to make a one-stop work, even if the team had thought that it could. And the biggest positive, of course, at the end of the day for the Papaya team is that they have lots of pace still to rely on in that car, and 8 more race weekends to try and steal both the drivers and constructors championship from Max Verstappen and Red Bull. Speaking of Max Verstappen, ironically, on a weekend that he struggled to find pace, grip and performance from his Red Bull, Sergio Perez actually showed some decent race pace and finished only a couple of places back from Max at the end of the day. He did get a helping hand in his race with George Russell from his mechanics, who executed a great pit stop, and also he got a bit of luck in that Russell's corresponding pit stop was slow, so initially their strategy to undercut the Red Bull wasn't successful. Now, ultimately, the Mercedes driver did chase Perez down and overtook him again, but Perez raced fairly in that encounter and he kept it clean, which is a positive signal, because he has often lost his common sense in similar scenarios over the last 18 months. So while it was overall a very frustrating weekend for Red Bull and particularly for Max Verstappen, it being so far off what he is used to seeing and used to experiencing and achieving, it actually wasn't that bad of a weekend for Sergio Perez on Sunday. On the other side of the Red Bull garage, though, there were two particular team radio calls from Max during the Grand Prix that I found interesting. The first one was around lap 40. Verstappen asked his engineer whether or not he should race the McLaren of Lando Norris based on Red Bull's strategy, the overall race strategy for him. And considering the fact that Norris is Verstappen's closest rival in the Drivers' Championship, I did find that message a bit curious. Of course, I completely understand that you don't want to risk whatever points you're on schedule to score unnecessarily. You don't want to cook your tyres, especially in the conditions that they were racing in today. But at the same time, it should also be entirely possible for these two to race without the most likely result being that damage is going to be done to either one or both of them. And it just seemed it seemed a bit out of character for Max, that message. And the other team radio message that I found interesting from him was further towards the end of the race. He was being chased down by George Russell and he came over the radio asking for the people in the background at Red Bull to make sure that they were awake, because despite the fact that he was in a poorer position than they're used to being in, the points are still important. Now, obviously, we don't know what else happened, if anything, on the team radio before that comment. But considering how critical Verstappen often is of his team, even when they're in winning form, personally, I wouldn't have loved the intonation from Max there that there's a chance of the strategists and teammates in Red Bull falling asleep on the job. I think, if anything, what the last couple of years should have shown him is that that is not what's to be expected. So, again, an interesting one there from Max, not one that I personally would have loved if I was a member of that team. Elsewhere, Mercedes have begun to recover their pre-summer break pace, but they still haven't maximised their potential. George Russell had a great start, but he was a little bit wide going into turn one, and that pushed him back down to kind of the middle of the top 10. And then he had a slow stop also later on in the race, which put him in a challenging position, as I said before, trying to execute that undercut on Sergio Perez. Now, he did pull it off eventually with the help of DRS, but I think George Russell will have felt that there was a bit of bad luck there for him today, and having qualified third, that he would have expected to finish higher than he did. On the other side of the Mercedes garage, Lewis Hamilton had looked very quick all weekend and then just couldn't put it together for his final flying lap in Q3 and qualifying on Saturday, and described himself as furious after qualifying because of failing to convert that pace across the weekend into pole position. Thankfully for him, Sunday was better than Saturday, and I think considering everything that was going on and the challenges around tyres and the conditions, he probably managed the best that he could out of the race today. But definitely you could very clearly tell from that post-qualifying interview on Saturday that he was very, very unhappy with himself, and given that he spent the last couple of years mostly being unhappy with the car, that you can understand is very frustrating then when he actually has the machine underneath him to achieve something, but then falls short himself. Funnily enough, there isn't a whole lot to say about the Ferraris, despite the fact that they finished first and fourth today. Certainly one stopping worked for them against the strategies of those around them, particularly the McLarens, as I mentioned earlier. Although Leclerc did question the strategy with him stopping so early. He wasn't happy. He kind of came over the radio and said, why have you done this to me? But in fairness, he managed to nurse his tyres home against the odds. They looked absolutely wrecked in Parc Fermé, but it doesn't matter. They made it to the end and they'll hopefully pass the weight test as well. But I think it did, of course, help that the Tifosi were attempting to quite literally roar Charles Leclerc and his waning tyres to the finish line over the last couple of laps. They let out some fantastic cheers every time he came down the start-finish straight, and understandably he was very ecstatic on team radio after the win. And I think, given that he is a driver who performs best when he's got a strong sense of momentum behind him, he's not a driver that's, you know, as likely to pull an amazing performance out of nowhere. He likes to be a bit more consistent than that. I think Ferrari will be hoping that he can obviously continue his winning ways, because things have really opened up in the past number of races, particularly with the Constructors' Championship. Couple of honourable mentions. Franco Colapinto finished just outside the points after being swapped in for American driver Logan Sargeant at Williams. Obviously quite a tough pill for Sargeant to swallow, but he really never delivered on that seat in Williams, and I think it's the right decision certainly for the team to let him go and to not, I suppose, kid themselves that something magical was going to happen. It's always very tough and very raw when someone gets dropped mid-season, and I think it would be tough for him to come back from that, but I personally don't see him getting another seat in F1. I think Sargeant will probably be more suited to racing in the US, but we'll have to wait and see what happens there with him. Elsewhere on the driver market, it was a bit of a bittersweet weekend for Kimi Antonelli at Mercedes. He took part in free practice one on Friday in George Russell's car, but unfortunately crashed it quite early doors, and he wasn't able to get any more running under his belt. He just went out there and got a bit too excited. He just pushed a bit too hard and ultimately couldn't hang on. On the flip side of things, he was officially announced as George Russell's new teammate for the 2025 season, with, of course, Lewis Hamilton departing for Ferrari. Antonelli has only recently turned 18, making him one of the youngest ever drivers to make their F1 debut. And Mercedes have signed him on a one-year contract. And reading between the lines, you would imagine that there's a couple of things contributing to that. Obviously, his inexperience at the F1 level, along with those incoming regulation changes in 2026, which are going to be a big shake-up, and as well a constantly evolving driver market where we still don't know what some of the teams are going to look like in 2025. So you'd imagine that those are just some of the reasons for only signing him on that one-year stint. I mean, hopefully he makes it work, but I think it really, it is a bit of an unknown at the moment, so we will have to wait and see how he fares. But in the meantime, Formula One heads to Baku next for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, which takes place on Sunday, September 15th. So we will have a 1 week break without racing next weekend before the action gets underway again. But with just 8 races left in this longest ever Formula One season, there are certainly lots still left to play for. I'm going to move on to some rugby before the break. Sadly, the Munster senior women's squad lost their Interpro final against Leinster at the King Spanning Stadium in Belfast yesterday. Having won all 3 of their Interpro fixtures en route to the final, including a strong win against Leinster here in Cork, it was certainly a much more energised Leinster squad that showed up for yesterday's final and exerted their dominance on the game. The final score was Leinster 27 points to Munster 7 points. And earlier this week, I was on a call with Fiona Hayes and out half Kate Flannery from Munster as they spoke to the press about the run up to the final. But since we know the result of that game, let's go ahead and take a listen to some of the other topics that were discussed during that call. First up, you'll hear from Fiona about her interpretation of the overall level of the 2024 Interpros, her thoughts on Munster representation in the Ireland women's squad at senior level, and she also gave some detailed insight into a couple of the Munster players in particular as well.
I've watched it with Connacht and Ulster and Leinster, and everyone is trying to play wide. They're trying to get everyone involved in the game. You very rarely go away from any of these Interpro games and say, you know, it was a forwards dominated game or whatever. I feel like there's just such amazing athletes out there that it's come together, and these players being in that NTS system for the last year, it's the confidence I think that they have to try and pull the trigger to get wide, to try offloads, to do these things. And you know, we obviously have our systems, our shape in place, but I think it's the girls that are there, and the standard has been risen completely by them backing themselves and going out and doing it on the pitch. So yes, it's been a huge shift in standard, but it's just going to get better. I think we're trying to reinforce, and I think, you know, even as a coach, I'm embarrassed sometimes if I'm reviewing things and saying, why weren't you running there? And if anyone went back and looked at me back in my heyday, I think they'd come back with me eclipsed with a few as well. But it's just the beauty of the game and the resources coming into it now. You can see that these players are comfortable and they're getting out and showing it on the pitch, which is brilliant to see. Yeah, look, I obviously coach these girls. I see the talent there. I'm watching them week in, week out, reviewing all those AIL games and looking at the people they're up against. So 100% from my perspective, I would like to see Munster players in there. But, you know, we're constantly pushing. We're pushing for those standards. So from our perspective, we've just got to keep working our socks off down in Munster. And hopefully someday we'll be having a chat about having a lot too many Munster players on that squad. You know, I've coached a lot of a lot of players, I suppose, that would really work hard on concentrating on their systems and where to be all the time. I find with Chisholm, she just has this natural ability, this national talent to light it up. And just when you think she's not working hard enough, she'll just shoot through a gap and score a try for you. So she's just one of those players that I'm in awe of every week, because she brings her energy and she just brings her whole personality to our game down in Munster. Jane, as you know, Peter Clawsey's daughter, so she has rugby in the blood there. Unfortunately, or fortunately for Jane, she didn't go into the front row. She is someone that's pushed on through this Interpro series. Her athletic ability to break through the contact line, she's been working really hard in the gym, Eric, and she's someone, I suppose, yes, her dad would have played rugby, but when she came in herself, she wouldn't have had, I think it was maybe 3-4 years ago, she wouldn't have had very much rugby playing knowledge. So she started from scratch in that. I'm sure she asked Peter questions at home, but he's always slagging, saying none of the boys made it, but Jane has finally made it. So from our perspective, she's someone as a back row, works her absolute socks off, but she'll put her hand up herself and say she's constantly learning. So hopefully in the next couple of years, we'll see her push on as well and get up to that Irish system. And lastly, Alana, talk about characters. I don't know if some of you were here last week when we saw the headlines of her of her telling the Irish coach to pick up the phone and call her if he wants. It just sums up Alana for you. She's got great confidence. She works really, really hard, and that shift from centre into the wing, as I said last week, her moving to the wing, it's her footwork. If she went on a foot race against Chisholm or a couple of the other girls on out and out speed, probably Chisholm, a couple of them would be ahead of the pack. But with Alana, you've got the physicality, and it's that step that's killing people. If you watch back her try highlights, her ability to find space and dodge defenders coming at her is just next to none.
And let's hear now from out half Kate Flannery. She spoke about how she's grown through this latest Interpro experience in particular, and also about her goal of making the Irish senior squad in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Like a lot of our players on the team, we've either played against each other in the AIL or played together. So it's nice knowing like how we play and being able to link up with certain players. So I do think that definitely helps. Like, it's good because everyone kind of brings a different strength to the table. And I think like after winning off the back of the AIL, like there's a lot of players that it would definitely bring a lot of confidence into our team. Like, and we know what we can do and the ability we have to go and win stuff. So no, I think it definitely brings confidence to us. But also I think there's a good few people, like for example, Ballincollig have a few girls in there, and Shannon. And I think it's nice. The diversity is nice also, because we bring different strengths and different ideas to the table. And just obviously when there is a good few from the one group, it's handy, because already, for example, like I'm used to playing with Chisholm. So I know like if I kick ball down her channel, like she's always going to chase that and get it. So no, it's definitely helpful, I think. And to play every weekend and improve is definitely something that's helped me. Like, I think the more game time, the more you learn, and it's definitely just helped me progress. At the moment, I'm just focusing on each game, playing the best I can, like show my skills. And after that, it's out of my control. So hopefully like I'll get the opportunity in the coming year or so, where I can just have the opportunity to get into the camp and just show what I can do. So I think it's more of a case of just taking each game as they come, rather than thinking too much about the bigger picture. Definitely being more vocal is a part of it. Like, it's up to you to make a lot of the decisions. But I think the biggest challenge and the biggest work on I've had is kind of around the game management, like knowing when to kick, like when it's right to kick on the front foot rather than kicking possession away. And also when our team's under pressure, how can you turn that pressure and put it back on the other team? So I think that's definitely been a challenge, just to read and scan different pictures and learning how to react to different scenarios.
You are very welcome back to the second half of the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you until 7 o'clock. Quick score update from that late League of Ireland game between St Patrick's Athletic and Drogheda United. There's about 30 minutes played there, but it is still scoreless in that game for the moment. Let's move on now though to some news from the Irish national football team. The long-suffering saga of the post-Stephen Kenny managerial appointment ended finally over the summer with Heimer Hallow Grimson taking the job. I think quite wisely, John O'Shea has been kept on as his assistant, and the two men have been speaking at the squad announcement for the upcoming Nations League games with England and Greece. And they started off by addressing what their own working relationship is going to be like.
No, I think we just need to kind of start to work together to find out what is the best way to work. But in my opinion, I think personalities kind of click. There's a good trust between us, and I think we can share more or less everything. Like I've said before, in the beginning, probably John and Paddy will have more to say, knowing the players, knowing their characters, etc. So they will probably be more guiding me in the beginning, but that's good because they have both the experience playing with them, some of them, and then coaching as well. So it's a more for the national team and the federation to have them staying on and the staff. So a bit better before saying.
And John, for you, did it take long for Tenier to persuade you? Did you need persuading to get involved in the setup in this context?
No, I didn't need persuading at all, Tony. Obviously, as Heimer was just mentioned, in terms of the personalities and the trust, you could see that I was going to enjoy. And also, when you examine it all, I knew kind of what was going on, if you know what I mean, to an extent in the background. So I was always aware of the situation. So it was key for me to just assess everything with a cool, calm kind of way about it and go, no, this is really good for me. I'm still learning and it's a good person to be learning from.
What if a club opportunity came up during this campaign or in the next while? I mean, how long is the term of your contract or relationship between the two of you?
It's the exact same. It looks straightforward. Obviously, full focus on England and Greece first and foremost, but also the campaign to come, obviously a big draw coming up in a few months' time exactly too, so just to get really excited to continue on working with the players especially. I think that's the key thing because they're a good solid group and I can't wait for the manager to see exactly what the players and get to know them better, and I think that's where myself and Paddy will hopefully accelerate that process too.
Hey,
Mary,
hi.
Hey.
You said a couple of weeks ago when you were speaking to the fans that the team needed to find a faster, do you need to find that kind of player? When you look at this squad, do you see someone, do you have your eyes on somebody you can turn into that kind of player for you?
No, really, it was taken a little bit out of context, but I still like it the sentence. And in a way, I was saying we have so many players at a similar level, all of them have really nice characters, etc. Sometimes you want to have a player on the pitch that will make the opponent feel uncomfortable, and that is what I meant. But it's more the fact that I think we have a lot of players that kind of are similar. Whether it's the midfielders, whether it's the centre backs, if somebody shows up.
John, this role alongside Heimer, is it fair to say it's probably a little bit more responsive?
Yeah, look, not that it's anything different. An assistant coach or assistant head coach, whatever you want to go to. Obviously, when I got the chance to take the team, I brought Paddy in. So it's great that obviously we can carry that on. But also now we're here to support the manager and helping get him to accelerate learning about all the players as quick as he can, and hopefully leading that into positive results for the team.
Hi Harry, can you talk about putting the squad together then, how much of it is from what you've seen over the last few weeks and how much of it is from John and Paddy and what they've had in the previous groups?
Yeah, so more or less I looked at the players, the squad for the last two camps, so I was looking at those players and then asking about the individual, etc. So I've been trying to look at as many players as possible based on the knowledge of John and Paddy. And then at this camp, I have a chance to get to know them personally. And then after this camp, I can go and watch them live and see more of the diet, you know, what we can do. And that is why it's really important for me to have them It's
Rin and Alvin, maybe some who might be in. So Evan Ferguson hasn't played for about 5 months nearly. If he doesn't play at the weekend for Brighton, do you still think he'll be able to link up with the squad?
Well, I think he has some qualities that is good to have. We'll see in the 5 days we have in training how fit he is actually, but he is fit enough to be in the squad for Brighton, so no objection from the club that we selected him. So hopefully he's fitter than everybody thinks, but we'll see in the first five trainings.
And John, you weren't officially confirmed at the time of the manager's announcement. Can you talk a bit about that process, and have you received any guarantees as to what happens with the next managerial team?
No, look, it's straightforward. I'm here to support the manager for the campaign and the Nations League games and obviously the World Cup campaign, and that's it, and that's straightforward. There's no promises about anything afterwards, and I wouldn't have wanted that anyway, because you look, as I've seen in football, since I've been involved in it, what happened so quickly. So I was fully focused on having a conversation with the boss to see how he would like to work, how he would like to do things, and once I met him straight away, it was very, very good trust, very good conversations just about football, how he likes to approach things, how he likes to keep things simple as such, and also simple and effective. And I just liked the way he went about it.
You've named a squad with 13 Premier League players, three more who are in top flight clubs in other countries. Can you identify a strong core within that squad who you think you can build a team around in your image?
Yeah, of course. I think this is a squad. It's a lot of young players first and foremost that is probably going to be there for many years for Ireland. But of course, there's a core, and you know it has been. It's not a big change of a squad from before. So I would say there's no big surprises in the selection at this stage. The past coaches have selected and trusted, so why shouldn't I at least give them a chance?
And then just with John still involved, I suppose John, the work John has done over the last four games, is it a case now that you've been brought in to add something extra to that and build on the platform that was there? And could you sort of give us an idea of what that extra something would be from your perspective?
Well, I have my philosophy of how a national team should play, and I have my philosophy on what is possible to do, because it's such a difference having a club and a national team. You don't have much time, so you need, like John said, you need to have things simple, and you know you need to have continuity in what you're doing. And you don't have a pre-season and you don't have them every day, all days, and you cannot train two times a day because they're coming from a game. So it's kind of, you at this time we have probably three real training sessions, and how much can you influence? And if you try to overdo things, then probably you will fail. So start slowly to put some changes in and then build on that. You know, we're lucky, and I'm lucky that September, October, November, so the players will not go for 5-6 months away and come back. They will at least know what happened 3 weeks ago. But that's a good September, October, November is a good time to start in that sense, so you can build hopefully little by little in these 3 months.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see in those two games, first up England and then Greece, whether, as Halgrimsson is saying there, whether he's just sort of planting the seed. He only has three training sessions ahead of that first game. We will have to wait and see. However, the squad that he's named does include a first call-up for Casey McAteer, and captain Seamus Coleman and striker Evan Ferguson, who was mentioned there in that audio, are both named as well in the squad. Obviously, Ferguson returns having missed the June international window with that ankle injury. Striker Callum Robinson and Alan Brown both earn recalls as well, and Jason Malumbi is getting his first call-up since November 2023. The other returning folks are Chidozie Ogbeni, Nathan Collins. They were ruled out of the Hungary and Portugal matches through injury, so they are also making a comeback. Unfortunately, goalkeeper Gavin Bazunu remains a long-term absentee with that Achilles injury, and Josh Cullen is also set to miss his first Ireland squad since 2020 as he withdrew due to injury. As I said, those games coming up on the 7th and the 10th of September. England first up, followed by Greece. So it will certainly be revealing, maybe in that second game more so, to see what the initial impact is of this pretty significant shake-up at national level. We are switching back to rugby now. We're going to hear from Ger McCarthy again, because after being pitchside for that LGFA game earlier this afternoon, he hot-footed it over to Virgin Media Park for the men's under-19 rugby interpro between Munster and Connacht. It was a big win for the home side, with the final score being Munster 42 points to Connacht 10 points. And here is the full-time report from Ger.
Munster 42, Connacht 10. The final score from Virgin Media Park at today's PWC Under-19 Interprovincial Clash between the two provinces. A fantastic performance from Munster from start to finish began with Christian Foley, the loosehead prop, crossing the try line after 10 minutes. Charlie O'Shea converted to make it 7-0. Callum Elwood, son of former Irish international out half Eric Elwood, got Connacht on the board via a penalty 3 minutes later. But Munster continued to attack deep, and when Harry Murphy blocked an attempted clearance down and crossed the line, Charlie O'Shea converted for a second time to make it 14-3 in Munster's favour. Then the out half from CVC capped a fantastic first half performance by getting his first try of the afternoon and converting to send Munster in 21-3 ahead at the break. At the second half, Munster continued to press, Dara Prenter crossing and Charlie O'Shea converting his fourth of the afternoon to make it 28-3, and then a fifth try from Alex O'Connell, who had a fantastic game at number 14 before O'Shea did the necessary to make it 35-3. The game was all but over when O'Shea crossed for his second try, and the out half completed a fantastic day by converting to make it 42-3. Just before the end, Michael Smith crossed the line for Connacht and Callum Elwood converted to end the scoring, but it was Munster's day here in Virgin Media Park, winning on a scoreline of 42-10 over Connacht in the PWC Under-19 Interprovincial Championship. For the Big Red Bench at Virgin Media Park, I'm Ger McCarthy.
And after the game, Ger caught up with out half Charlie O'Shea, who scored 2 tries and 6 conversions. And he also spoke to winning head coach Aidan McNulty. So let's hear their thoughts now.
Charlie, congratulations. Fantastic performance today. Big score, 42-10. And you must be very pleased with your own performance. 2 tries and all those conversions.
Yeah, definitely. Probably more pleased with the team performance, especially after the last 2 games. We probably felt we didn't give a good account of ourselves. Especially in the last game against Ulster, we felt we had slip. So we're happy today to put in a big performance.
Yeah, at this level, it's all about under-19. It's the next step before you go senior. But how important is it to just get into that momentum, that groove of, you know, getting those points? And that winning feeling?
Yeah, definitely. It's like after the first game, we were probably a bit rusty because only our first game. We probably got a bit better in the second game, and now that game was probably our best performance yet. So it's crucial just to keep playing at that level.
I'm under Aidan McNulty in this management team. You've got a huge experience in the management team and a very, very good panel of players. What's it been like this year, getting together in those camps and UL and all the way through this interprovincial series?
Yeah, the coaches have been great. They've been very good. All the camps are great crack. We've been residential there for 2 weeks, so you'd stay down in Limerick for 4 days a week, and you'd stay over Monday, Tuesday, go home Wednesday, and come back Thursday, Friday. So it's a great experience for the whole summer, and keeps you ticking over to go back to school.
Big commitment as well. Even at this age, it is a big commitment on top of school and everything else, but you're obviously enjoying it. You played some superb rugby today.
Yeah, definitely. It's huge commitment for everyone, and people's parents as well driving down, but we all love it, so it makes it even better.
And just finally, results aside, overall, how far has this group progressed over this interprovincial series?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've come on massively since the first game to this game. We've grown every game and gotten better, and this is our best performance yet.
Excellent stuff. Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Aidan, fantastic performance. Whatever about the scoreline, your defence, the way you turned over the ball so many times today against Connacht, is that one of the things that you take most from this game?
Yeah, the defence was definitely something that was much improved, and I think Lee Nicholas has done a really good job of not only prepping the team for this game, but for the last 9 weeks has done an excellent job of bringing our principles to life. And yeah, it was a really good defensive performance today, individually from some guys and collectively. They did a great job to keep them out up until that last play. So, yeah, really pleased.
Charlie O'Shea will obviously grab a few headlines with his scoring, but the execution for each of your tries, especially in the first half, you had three chances and you got three tries. At the aside from the defending, that must also give you a lot of happiness, the fact that you're able to convert when you're getting into those danger areas.
Yeah, it's something we've been talking about. Is we've all campaign, we've created opportunities to score, and I was delighted today that they took some of those, still not all of them. I still think that there's more in that team to even, you know, create more opportunities to score and take those opportunities to score. But yeah, they're a group of really skillful players, and it was just great today that they went and showed that.
Overall, over this PWC Interprovincial Championship, I mean, it's all about bringing the next generation of talent through. It's not about scores, it's not about winning or losing necessarily. But what have you taken most from your time before this championship even began, when you were down in UL, and to now?
Yeah, the pathway in Munster is strong. Some of the score lines might not reflect that, but the players within the pathway are very exciting, and that they understand the way Munster people want to play. They understand our values and what we hold dear to us, and most importantly, that there's always going to be 3, 4, 5, 6 players in each team that will go on and represent Munster at senior level, and that's its ultimate purpose.
Yeah, the development of the players from the time that you and your group have had them, I mean, I must give you immense pride to see how much they have kept a general level of consistency and performance. I mean, that's really what you're looking for before you make that big step up to senior.
They actually haven't been as consistent as I'd like, but the most important thing out of all of this is that they put themselves in the shop window for national representation, that they show us Munster people that they desperately want to get better and play for Munster, whether that be at the next level or at the highest level they can. And that they leave here going that I've got better, I've met some great people, and I want to play rugby at the highest level I possibly can, and hopefully that is our senior team.
Excellent stuff. Congratulations, Aidan. Well done.
Thank you, Joe.
Great Interpro win there for the under-19s today. I had a quick word about the Paralympic Games at the end of the show last Sunday. I hope you've been watching, because Team Ireland have already won 2 medals, 1 in the swimming pool and 1 in the velodrome. And I figured we could do a recap of the action so far and let you know as well what's coming up for the rest of the games for our athletes while I'm at it. Now, I did cover today's action in the roundup at the top of the show, so we'll go back to Thursday and start from there, because Limerick swimmer Roisin Éireann was 4th in the final of the women's 100 metre butterfly S13 on Thursday, and she was just half a second off the bronze medal position, so that was a tough result for her. And earlier in the evening, Nicole Turner was 6th in the women's 50 metre freestyle S6 final, and if you saw Nicole's post-race interview, you'll know that it was a very real and raw conversation. She was very honest about her performance and about the realities of sport, and you really felt for her in that moment, because she clearly didn't think that she had met her own expectations. But the good news is that she will be back in the pool and competing again on Tuesday, and hopefully she'll be able to put in a performance that she's happier with in that 50 metre fly event on Tuesday. And she need look no further than her Paris swimming teammate Roisin Éireann for inspiration in that sense, because after finishing 4th on the Thursday, she was back in the pool on Friday to win Ireland's first medal of the Paris Games, and she took silver in the women's 100 metre backstroke S13. It was fantastic to see that performance and to hear from her friends and family afterwards. They were obviously over the moon, although her sisters did say that they wouldn't be able to come back and see her compete again in this game because they had to go back to school. And I just think, surely there must be some sort of exception for that. But sadly, elsewhere in the pool, Ellen Keane was denied a bronze in the women's 100 metre breaststroke SB8 by just 19 hundredths of a second, and therefore had to settle for fourth. But again, silver lining, just like Nicole Turner, she's back in action on Tuesday and will no doubt be gearing up for a redemption performance there. And yesterday, Saturday, Greta Strømkøyt, she competed in the women's 1500 metre T13 final. And although she came fourth in the race, she managed to set a new European record in doing so, which she can be very proud of indeed. The good news is that we are only 4 days into the Paris Games, so there is lots more action to come. Team Ireland will be involved across no less than 7 sporting disciplines across the rest of the Games. We've got athletics, swimming, triathlon, table tennis, equestrian, road cycling and powerlifting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what else they can produce. And don't forget that you can watch the action live every day on RT and the RT player. So make sure you do tune in and get behind our athletes. They're doing fantastically well so far. Now, I'm coming to the end of the show here, but I didn't have time to fit in reports on the Old Firm derby during my bulletins today, but Celtic did ease themselves to a 3-0 win against Glasgow rivals Rangers in the Scottish Premiership this afternoon, and that victory does take them 5 points clear of Rangers. And manager Brendan Rodgers told Sky Sports News after the game that it was a pretty much perfect afternoon.
Brendan, well done. Thank you. How pleased were you with that today?
Yeah, I thought, firstly, defensively, we were really strong right to the very end. Probably a little bit in the first 10 minutes. We were just a fraction passive in our positioning to put pressure on the ball. But after that, okay. In the moments we had to defend, we defend well. But I thought, offensively, I thought we were so exciting going forward. And we got 3 goals. The goal that was disallowed was a brilliant worked build-up play and getting through, so it looks so tight. That would have been a fantastic goal for us. So, but other opportunities in the game, I thought the speed in our game, how we attacked the space was exceptional in the game, and obviously we get 3 and then maybe we could add a few more. So everything we want, make it really, really difficult for the opposition, and obviously the crowd played their part today as well. So overall, fantastic result and performance.
You mentioned that disallowed goal. How much did that give you an extra spark and catalyst once you got that to go and kick on and get the 3 you actually did?
Yeah, well sometimes you need something to inspire you within the game. But these games are always, they can always be fret. But I thought some of our play was absolutely outstanding. So, but now once we got the first goal, then you could see everything grow and develop from them.
Callum McGregor was saying you didn't really want the first half to come to an end, given how sort of rampant you were at the end of that first half. Is that the pleasing thing? You just kept going for more.
Yeah, well, it's a bit, we aim to make it as difficult as we can for the opposition. That's the idea. So we never want to rest on 2-0. We want to get 3-4-5, and it could have been that in the second half.
I mentioned your captain. Just how pleased were you with his performance today, and how much he is the driving force of this team?
Well, he is. He's such an incredible captain, and he's obviously having to try to be shackled today with the Amanda trying to do that sort of man-marking job on him when he had the ball. But he's so clever, Cal. He knows when to attract the marker, when to then drop him and attack the space. And obviously his goal, I said to him the other day about, you know, 3 goals in 3 league games, and I don't think he's done that before. So yeah, he was outstanding.
You mentioned that in terms of maybe the game plan to try and stop him playing, but does that say a lot about him and the way your team play, that doesn't matter what the game plan is, they won't be stopped?
Well, no, listen, you have to always respect. I thought Rangers started well in the game, and you always have to respect, and I respect Philippe massively. He's you know, having to work through a difficult challenge with not being at the stadium and other issues, but I think for us, we go into every game, like I said, with that humility, knowing that we have to work But the players work so hard, and we get to this point after a long pre-season, and we've started the season so well and with a real good intensity.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, now that you've got to the international break, where do you feel Celtic are and how much more is there to come?
Well, there always has to be more. I think that we can, like I said, that our pressing has been really, really good, and for a lot of the game it was today, you've seen that hunger and that ability to double up around players. So I was really, really pleased with that. But there's other aspects that we will analyse when we look back on the game where we can improve. But I think you see the level that the players are at and the mentality that they're at. We're in a really good place, but it's so early in the season and there's a lot more growth to come.
You were able to drip feed some of the new players in as well today. How good was that for you to be able to do that, and what do you expect from them going forward?
Well, I think it will be a squad game for us. It's really nice that Arna comes in, Luke comes in, Adam obviously understands, having been at the club, but those guys know the challenge to keep the intensity, keep the mentality in the game, and great for Luke, you know, coming in, big Celtic supporter, so he comes in, makes his first appearance in a Celtic Rangers game, so that'll give him great pride, and now he knows how we function, how we operate, he'll hopefully only get better. But no, it will be a collective for us this season, and that was always the message.
That is everything I have time for this evening, folks. Just before I go, I want to give you a score update at halftime in that League of Ireland game between St. Patrick's Athletic and Drogheda United. It is St. Pat's 2, Drogheda United 1. That is the halftime score there. Make sure that you don't go anywhere, because Green on Red is up next with Mags Blackburn. But it has been Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. I hope you have a lovely rest of your evening.